This is Radio Health Journal, a weekly news magazine with the latest in health, medicine, and technology. A closer look at the issues that affect your health and well-being, prevention, lifestyles, treatments, and trends, all from the nation's top experts. I'm Shel Lustig.
I'm Nancy Benson.
And I'm Reed Pence. This week, finding factors in the blood that might make old bodies young again. Just how far might it go?
The sequoia tree has the option of living thousands of years, and I don't see why we can't have that same option.
Then, exploding head syndrome, a name that grabs you, but what does it mean?
In my mind, I'm picturing shelves falling, books falling onto children. I mean, I don't know what it was, because it was a loud crash.
All that and more this week on Radio Health Journal.
Do you or someone you love have Parkinson's disease? For the more than 5 million people worldwide living with a disease, seeing a doctor who specializes in Parkinson's can help optimize care. Yet survey results show that fewer than half of patients have ever seen a Parkinson's specialist. Partners in Parkinson's, a strategic health initiative of the Michael J. Fox Foundation and AbbVie, offers free in-person educational events in communities across the country. These events connect patients and families with resources, including local support groups and services such as healthcare providers and clinical research opportunities. Kate Harmon, whose father has Parkinson's, explains.
When my father was diagnosed with Parkinson's, my family knew we needed to get him the best care possible. I attended a local Partners in Parkinson's event and met so many people who are new to a Parkinson's diagnosis. We learned about the disease and met with healthcare providers and other members of the Parkinson's community based right here in our area.
To learn more about Parkinson's disease, attend a webinar, or to find an event near you, visit partnersinparkinsons.org. That's partnersinparkinsons.org.
It's a fact of life that all of us, if we're lucky, will get old. Wrinkles will set in, gray hair, and the diseases of aging, like arthritis, diabetes, heart disease, and dementia. Scientists thought they'd figured out why, according to Dr. Harold Katcher, professor of biology at the University of Maryland University College.
It was always assumed that aging was a question of wear and tear, occurring at the cellular level. Cells would, after a time, experience wear and tear. Their mitochondria would, after a time, start producing free radicals that increased with age. The mitochondria became less efficient. DNA damages were thought to appear in the nucleus. Eventually, the cells broke down, and eventually the organism dies as a result.
Still, all the healthy foods and antioxidant vitamins in the world can't turn back the clock. But a series of experiments physically connecting young and old mice shows that rejuvenation might be possible. The connection is called parabiosis.
Everybody is probably familiar with the idea of Siamese twins or conjoined twins, where you have two individuals that are somehow connected so that they basically share a large part of their body. So parabiosis is basically the surgical joining of two animals to create that kind of situation.
That's Dr. Michael Conboy, a researcher at the University of California at Berkeley. He and his wife, Irena, a professor of bioengineering at Berkeley, are among the world's foremost scientists looking into factors in the body that might produce rejuvenation.
In parabiosis, the skin and the inner sides of the two animals are surgically joined together. And then when that surgery heals, the animals become basically joined as one. So the blood vessels from the skin of one animal will merge with the blood vessels of the other animal, and then they basically share a circulation. So whatever floats around in the blood of one animal then transfers over, crosses over, and starts floating around in the circulation of the other animal.
In connecting their circulatory systems, old mice literally get young blood, and their bodies start acting like they're younger.
What we looked at specifically was how does the animal regenerate after an injury? The injury we have for mice is like the muscle injury with a little bit of snake venom, like as if the mouse got bitten by a snake, probably unusual for a mouse. And what we found is that the old mouse, if it's sharing circulation with a young mouse, that muscle regenerates much, much better and faster than it would if that old mouse was alone or if it's joined to another old mouse so that it's sharing old mouse blood instead of young mouse.
But it doesn't take an injury for the effects of young blood to show up. Virtually every system in the body that the Conboys have looked at seems to get younger in old mice that are connected to young ones.
We also looked at some other organs that are sort of representative of the different types of organs you have in the body. We looked at liver and saw that the new liver cells forming were now improved, so there were more liver cells being born in the old mouse's liver. And we also looked in the brain and found that there was more neurons or neural stem cells that were being born in the memory part of the brain. This is only when it was sharing blood with a young partner, much more rejuvenation of these organs than you would see if it was by itself or sharing blood with an old animal.
Other researchers have found the same thing in experiments on mice, according to Nelson Yi, founder of X Vitality Sciences, a firm that hopes to commercialize factors in the blood that might promote rejuvenation.
We see enhancement of stem cell growth, and that occurs in numerous tissues. So that seems to occur in almost every tissue that's been examined. That includes the brain. There's more neural stem cell growth in the muscles. The satellite cells become more youthful. The beta cells that produce insulin in the pancreas, they also regenerate at a faster rate. In addition to that, inflammation levels seem to decrease, and then other essentially like youthful characteristics reappear in the older animal throughout the entire body.
When two animals were spliced together, the maximal lifespan of the older animal was increased. That is, increased above the maximal lifespan for the maximal species lifespan. They actually had old animals that lived some 20% more than maximum lifespan.
Catcher notes that the principle also seems to work for organs and when scientists change their environment in other ways. For example, by transplanting an old organ, such as a thymus, into a young recipient.
The thymus grows smaller with age, and it turns into fat. It's called involutes. So the thymus involutes with age. It becomes fat, and everybody assumes that is an irreversible process that's due to wear and tear. But if you take that thymus and you place it in the body cavity in the circulatory system of a young animal, that involute thymus, that totally turned to fat piece of garbage, it becomes functional again. Its tissues again can mature lymphocytes as they could when it was younger, and it's found that this thymus will be functional for the entire life of the young animal. That's essentially doubling its lifespan aside from rejuvenating it.
However, is it really sharing blood that rejuvenates cells and organs? Conboy says you don't really know when the entire body is involved. It might be explained by a whole host of other factors. So several years ago, the Conboys sought to narrow them down by taking the process outside the body and seeing if human cells would respond the same way.
We had assays that we could do in a petri dish. We take muscle cells out and plate them with a little bit of young mouse blood, and those muscle cells would do their muscle thing. They'd proliferate and make muscles in a petri dish quite well. If we put them in a petri dish with some old blood, they didn't do so well. So the question was, if there's something that's in young blood that's rejuvenating, if we mix it with the old blood, we should see the rejuvenation effect. If there's something that in the old blood that's suppressing, if we mix the two bloods together, we should see a suppression of the young blood. So when we mixed them together, the performance was like old blood. So that meant that there was something that was in the old blood that was kind of dominant and suppressing, or at least these particular muscle cells.
So what's going on? The key is stem cells and their power to repair and regenerate. At one time, scientists believed that stem cells die off and disappear as an animal ages. But now we know that that's not true. Conboy says stem cells are still there, but old blood is holding them back, not providing those stem cells with the signals they need to work.
It appears that all of our tissues have their resident stem cells. So in muscle, there'd be muscle stem cells that can make more muscle. And in the blood, of course, there's stem cells in the bone marrow that can make blood. And in different parts of the brain, there's cells that can make new neurons. My understanding is that with age, these cells, their numbers might decrease, but there's still plenty of them there. But they don't wake up and perform and do their job like they did when they were young. What it looks like is when we change their environment, when we give them signals like they would get when they were young, then that's enough to get them to wake up and start dividing and then make new tissue, such as you would need, let's say, after an injury, or maybe just to improve the overall function of an organ.
With their environment changed to a youthful environment, a partially youthful environment, let's remember, they develop the characteristics of young stem cells, including their rate of proliferation, their ability to repair wounds, etc., things that, according to the theory of wear and tear, should have been over and gone and irreparable.
It doesn't take whole blood for rejuvenation to take place. Whatever factors are at work appear to be in the plasma, the liquid portion of the blood. Catcher cites the work of Dr. Saul Villeda, now at the University of California, San Francisco.
He actually injected plasma into a rat. Now, he did not remove the rat's plasma. This was not in any way plasma exchange. He simply injected plasma into a rat, and that rat showed significant rejuvenation of its mental facilities and actually its ability to form new neurons in its brain.
Scientists have found a number of factors in plasma that appear to rejuvenate cells. The Kahn boys have identified two, a signal protein called TGF-beta and the hormone oxytocin. Using TGF-beta, the Kahn boys were able to get human cells from 70-year-olds to behave as if they were 50 years younger. Dr. Amy Wagers at Harvard University has found that a protein called GDF11 can rejuvenate the muscles and hearts of old mice. It's got a lot of people wondering if turning back the clock isn't a pipe dream anymore.
It'd be nice if some of these therapies would allow, start with a mouse to live longer, and then maybe could translate to a human so we could live longer. But I think realistically, what we definitely see is that we improve the regeneration of tissue. So that's the first therapy that I can envision for people would be after, after a surgery or an accident or something. Instead of taking forever to heal and not all that well, you'd regenerate like you did when you were, in your teens.
But while researchers test components of plasma to get to that point, others like Catcher and Yi have plans to offer transfusions of plasma itself from young people to old people. Plasma transfusions have long been approved by the FDA, principally for treating coagulation disorders. But as an off-label use, marketing for plasma exchange programs in the United States wouldn't be allowed. So Catcher's firm, Teratopsis Corporation, is looking to work through clinics in Southeast Asia. Yi's firm, X Vitality Sciences, is seeking arrangements with clinics in Eastern Europe and South America, and trying to build up the science in studies that are as yet unpublished.
Our company partnered with the university to do a retrospective trial of around 5,000 people. In our patients, median number of transfusions was 3, and we found some pretty positive results. There is a positive effect for resistance to infections and also an improvement in all-cause mortality.
Catcher admits we're in the very early stages of putting applications of rejuvenation into practice. It could be that eventually components of plasma will be narrowed down to the very best one or two for rejuvenation. But Catcher is 71 and doesn't want to wait.
I believe that there are alternative ways to get to the same thing. I mean, the first flying machine was a dirigible that was rapidly overtaken by heavier than aircraft. This is perhaps a dirigible, but it will get man into the air and make it into a reality. We will be able to control aging. And ultimately, I'd like to see it so that perhaps everybody on their 30th birthday will have their first renewal that'll bring them back to their early 20s again, effectively. And that process can be repeated, we don't know how long. The sequoia tree has the option of living thousands of years, and I don't see why we can't have that same option.
You can find out more about all of our guests through links on our website, radiohealthjournal.net. You can also find archives of our shows there, as well as on iTunes and Stitcher. I'm Reed Pence.
Coming up, exploding head syndrome. Not as bad as it sounds, when Radio Health Journal continues.
Geico applauds your inner happy camper.
A merit badge of awesomeness goes out to the part of you that wants to put the recreation in recreational vehicle. The part of you that packs up everything and everybody in the RV and says, let's get this show on the road. Because Geico has specialized agents who help save money on more than just car insurance. Geico will insure that entire RV, so you can get the s'more making, poison ivy dodging, same song singing, ghost storytelling, campfire building, best time you ever had with your family, show on the road.
Geico for your RV. See how much you could save.
Now is the time to save on hardwood and more at Lumber Liquidators' End of Summer Clearance Sale. We're making room for new fall inventory. That means it's your chance to get an incredible deal on solid, pre-finished hardwood for just 99 cents. Wide plank, hand-scraped oak for $1.99. Beautiful carbonized bamboo for $1.29. Plus, get 10 to 15% off Morningstar Bamboo, the number one selling brand of bamboo flooring. Top quality laminate and vinyl plank from 49 cents and 24-month special financing. Hurry, the End of Summer Clearance Sale is going on now. Visit LumberLiquidators.com to find a store near you.
The range of maladies people may suffer is incredibly wide, from minor inconveniences to life-threatening. But when someone says they experience something called exploding head syndrome, you might imagine a scene from a Stephen King novel. It's not as scary as its name suggests, but exploding head syndrome is a real disorder, and it can be problematic.
Sound asleep, middle of the night, all of a sudden there's this huge crashing sound that I hear. And I was totally positive that something had fallen in the kids' bedroom. In my mind, I'm picturing shelves falling, books falling onto children. I mean, it was just, I don't know what it was because it was a loud crash.
That's Walter Mischka, a health blogger who's experienced exploding head syndrome.
I bolted up in bed and grabbed the flashlight I have, and I started sneaking around the upstairs trying to find what had fallen because it was a loud crash. Couldn't find anything, so I thought, I'll wait till the morning, see what happened. Kids seemed okay, so I just went back to bed. And in the morning, there was nothing. Nothing fell. Nothing had happened. I had no idea what it was.
And that is exploding head syndrome. Just when you're falling asleep, you hear a loud crash or banging noise that startles you awake, and you swear you heard it and get up to investigate, but eventually realize it was all in your head. The name of the syndrome is obviously colorful, but Mischka isn't so sure that's a good thing.
It kind of almost trivializes it, the name. It kind of makes it sound silly or like a weird sci-fi movie or something. It is a little disconcerting when you have it, when your head explodes in the middle of the night. I kind of feel like it should have a better name, but it hasn't come around to that yet.
But Dr. Brian Sharpless says the name is what everyone remembers. Sharpless is assistant professor of psychology at Washington State University and author of the book Sleep Paralysis.
It's certainly a dramatic name, and it was coined by an English psychiatrist by the name of J.M.S. Peirce. If you go through the literature, it's been called various things, and they've all been fairly dramatic. So in the 1920s, it was called a snapping of the brain. And if you go back to Silas Ware Mitchell's original descriptions in 1876, he called them sensory discharges. So it's certainly an attention grabber.
So yes, the name is unusual, but Sharpless says exploding head syndrome is more widespread than most people think.
I was able to find some descriptions of it going back as early as 1876. There's been so little research on it, we really don't know if it's increasing or decreasing. The clinical lore said that it was essentially a rare disorder that only occurred in people over the age of 50. So in order to test that out, I interviewed, along with my grad students, over 200 people using a clinical interview I developed. And what we found was it actually wasn't rare. We found it in 13.5% of the sample, with much higher rates if you suffer from another sleep disorder called isolated sleep paralysis. So it didn't seem to be rare in a sample of relatively young students.
Exploding head syndrome isn't physically harmful, as its name may imply, so some doctors dismiss it. But Sharpless warns that the psychological effects can take a heavy toll.
By themselves, these episodes are harmless if they are truly exploding head syndrome. By definition, you can't have any more than a mild sensation of pain during the events. If you're having significant pain during it, you should probably definitely get a check out. So where it becomes a problem is in how people respond to it. So I've seen cases of people that experience it 5 to 7 times a night. So you can imagine that causes quite a bit of sleep disruption. And it can be associated with a lot of fear. People might think there's something really wrong with them. They might be having subarachnoid hemorrhages. They might be having all sorts of things going on. They might actually try to avoid going to sleep or start having feared responses even when going into their bedroom.
For them, anxiety can lead to sleepless nights and dead tired days. For others, exploding head syndrome really is no big deal. Doctors don't know what triggers the perception of exploding sounds, but Sharpless says it seems to be related to sleep paralysis, where a person wakes up temporarily unable to speak or move.
As with any relatively understudied phenomenon, there are a lot of theories out there. The one that I think makes the most sense is that you have a part of your brainstem called the reticular formation. One of the things it's responsible for is shutting down your body as you go to sleep. So what it'll do is kind of like a computer shutting down. It'll start inhibiting your visual neurons, your motor neurons. What we think happens in exploding head syndrome is that instead of shutting your auditory neurons down, what it does is makes them fire all at once. And that's why you get this really massive, loud, undifferentiated noise. It may be related to sleep paralysis for the same part of the brain, because in sleep paralysis, the reticular formation actually inhibits your motor neurons, which is normal during REM sleep. But when it happens when you're awake, as it does in sleep paralysis, it's pretty scary too.
Since exploding head syndrome is not completely understood, Sharpless says that doctors have few treatment options. For patients who are disrupted by it, specialists have prescribed several different drugs, but results are mixed.
There are some case reports in the literature of different ways to treat it. So certain psychotropic drugs might be helpful. Particular types of antidepressants in a small number of cases have been shown to be useful. The anticonvulsant drug called topiramate, which is brand named Topamax, has been reported to not reduce the frequency of the episodes, but what it does, it turns the volume down, so the less distressing when they happen. But probably the easiest thing to do to help people is just to educate them about it and reassure them that it's not a dangerous phenomenon. It's just a strange sort of misfiring in your brain. But if it is causing you problems or if it is associated with pain, you should certainly go to a doc to check it out. And you should look for a sleep specialist who has experience with what are called parasomnias, which is the class of disorders that exploding head syndrome is in.
Luckily for Mishka, his exploding head syndrome was one of those harmless cases. After a few occurrences, it just sort of went away. He says if he were to give advice to someone experiencing the same things, he'd keep it simple.
So obviously tell them you're not crazy, and I don't think it's debilitating. I'm not, from what I've read, it's not dangerous in any way. To me, I kind of just roll with it.
Though the name suggests otherwise, exploding head syndrome is a manageable condition for most sufferers. For the unfortunate few, though, every night seems noisy and exhausting. Dr. Brian Sharpless invites listeners to check his website at briansharpless.com. You can find Walter Mishka's blog at chicagonow.com/openheart or through a link on our website, radiohealthjournal.net. Our writer-producer this week is Evan Rook. Our production directors are Sean Waldron and Nick Hofstra. I'm Nancy Benson.
Radio Health Journal returns in just a moment.
Today, one out of every five American children have obesity. The American Academy of Orthopedic Surgeons encourages parents to keep an open dialogue with their physicians about the impact of excess weight on their children's bone and joint health. Dr. Michael Parks is an orthopedic surgeon specializing in joint replacement.
Every day I see adult patients who have aches and pains in their hips, knees, and ankles because they are overweight or have obesity. Every pound of body weight places 4 to 6 pounds of pressure on the knee joint. For children, too much weight also places excess stress on their growth plate, leading to a higher risk for broken bones, early arthritis, and other serious conditions. Encourage your kids to get up, get out, and get moving.
Preventing childhood obesity is critical. Children who are overweight or have obesity also are likely to develop lifelong bone and joint health issues. You can find resources on childhood obesity and bone and joint health at anationinmotion.org/obesity. That's anationinmotion.org/obesity.
What are you going to do with your old car? You can try selling it, you could junk it, or you can donate it to Heritage for the Blind. Your car will be towed away for free, and your donation is tax deductible. Just call 1-800-835-1478. Heritage for the Blind accepts cars, vans, trucks, and boats. It doesn't matter if your vehicle runs or not. It will be towed away for free, and you'll be supporting those that need help. Heritage for the Blind is a nonprofit organization that helps the visually impaired live fuller lives. Call right now to donate your car, and as a special thank you, you'll receive a free 3-day vacation voucher to over 50 locations. Call Heritage for the Blind right now. Call 1-800-835-1478. Donating is easy, and your vehicle is towed away for free. Plus, you'll get a free vacation voucher for donating. Call now, 1-800-835-1478. That's 1-800-835-1478.
Medical notes this week. After the California measles outbreak late last year, we've heard a lot about parents who kept their kids from being vaccinated. But a new report from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention finds that nationally, the proportion of children who aren't vaccinated is less than 1%. But vaccine exemption levels vary widely from state to state. In Idaho, 6.5% of kids received a vaccine exemption last school year. In Mississippi, that figure was less than 1/10 of 1%.
People who have had an organ transplant have one more thing to look out for: melanoma. A study in the Journal of Investigative Dermatology shows that transplant recipients who take immunosuppressive drugs are twice as likely to develop melanoma as other people, four times more likely to be diagnosed with melanoma which has spread, and three times more likely to die of it. Recipients had a poor prognosis even when the cancer was very small when discovered at an early stage. Aggressive melanomas were most likely the first 4 years after transplant. A poor lifestyle is connected to the development of type 2 diabetes later in life, but other factors can make its impact much worse. A study in the journal BMJ shows that if an adult has an unhealthy lifestyle, such as smoking or eating a poor diet, they're more likely to develop diabetes if they had a low birth weight as well. Researchers say 59% of new diabetes cases can be attributed to a poor lifestyle, 18% to the interaction of low birth weight and an unhealthy lifestyle, and 22% to low birth weight alone. Many people who would like to quit smoking don't try because they fear gaining a lot of weight. But a study in the International Journal of Obesity finds that two factors can help predict which smokers will put on more than 20 pounds when they try to quit. If someone smokes more than 25 cigarettes a day or has a body mass index of 30 or more before their quit attempt, they were likely to put on 20 pounds or more as a result of quitting. But researchers say the extra weight still isn't as unhealthy as smoking. And finally, some people who are depressed turn to their smartphones for relief. But a new study shows that that may only make things worse. Researchers writing in the journal Computers in Human Behavior say if you have a chance to see someone face-to-face instead, take it. After all, they say life is short. And that's Medical Notes this week. More in a moment.
Now is the time to save on hardwood and more at Lumber Liquidators' End of Summer Clearance Sale. We're making room for new fall inventory. That means it's your chance to get an incredible deal on solid, pre-finished hardwood for just 99 cents. Wide plank, hand-scraped oak for $1.99. Beautiful carbonized bamboo for $1.29. Plus, get 10 to 15% off Morningstar Bamboo, the number one selling brand of bamboo flooring. Top quality laminate and vinyl plank from 49 cents and 24-month special financing. Hurry, the End of Summer Clearance Sale is going on now. Visit LumberLiquidators.com to find a store near you.
Walmart can help you stay one step ahead of flu season. Because at Walmart, you can get your flu shot anytime from one of our certified pharmacists. No appointment necessary. And while you're in the store, pick up Lysol disinfecting wipes and Lysol disinfectant spray that actually kill cold and flu viruses and antibiotic-resistant bacteria. These are steps you can take right now at Walmart to help prevent the flu from getting to you.
Some immunizations may not be available in all locations due to state law restrictions on pharmacist-administered immunizations. Age restrictions may apply. Use all products as directed.
And that's Radio Health Journal for this week. Radio Health Journal is a production of MediaTrax Communications, celebrating 25 years of award-winning public affairs. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook. Plus, you'll always find podcasts of our segments, information about our guests, and the latest health news at radiohealthjournal.net. Join us again next week for another edition of Radio Health Journal.